Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Good to be with you, everybody. So glad to have you be a part of the broadcast. Sorry, I killed the music a little bit too soft there right towards the end, but it's great to have you with us. We're excited. It is, what is the date? June 16th. My gosh, what's happening to this year? It's going so fast. But we do welcome you to be a part of the broadcast, tuning in. We have people dialed in from all over the country. I mean, look at this. Look at the lineup of people, literally all over the country. It's really good. So we must have a hot, well, we know we have a hot topic today. And we're excited to have in the Hot Topics segment, Casey Cunningham with us. Many of you know her, and she's well known in the industry, speaks a lot, and is also talking about probably one of the hottest topics today, and that is recruiting. It is so hot that some of the people, when we sent out the notice, started writing her, says, don't tell them everything. Whatever you do, Casey, keep some of the trade secrets you taught us off to the side. So it's obviously a hot topic. We're excited about it. By the way, I want to say a special thank you to Michael Keller, founder of Loan Sasquatch, who is offering our listeners for 90 days discount on the Loan Squatch app, where you can hear our radio program. It's there on that app. It's for $9.99 a month. It's got so many services and so many things you can do. Check it out at www.loansquatch, L-O-N-L-O-A-N, squatch, S-Q-U-A-T-C-H.com. Appreciate it. Also, a special thank you goes out to United Guarantee. We're talking about Qualified Mortgage. They're our sponsor, and they have really got some neat things when it comes to the ability to repay and the qualified mortgage rules that took a place in January. One thing you don't have to worry about if you're using United Guarantee is worrying about mortgage insurance and how that fits in. You see, United Guarantee's qualified mortgage insurance products make calculating points and fees that much easier when you're making sure the total is within the 3% required minimum or maximum cap on points and fees under the new QM regulations. These MI premiums are generally won't be a part of the equation. United Guarantee's QMI product suite includes post-pay monthly premiums, a new refundable single premium option, and a lender-paid versions of both the monthly and the single premiums. Each of these options are QM-friendly, and you can learn more about it all by going to www.ugcorp.com. Appreciate their sponsorship of this radio program. We talked to so many of their representatives across the nation. Alice and I will be in Indiana speaking tomorrow at the Indiana State Mortgage Bankers Conference there. For those of you that are in the area, come on by. I look forward to meeting you. For those of you attending, be sure to come up and say hi to Alice and I. Look forward to that. Also, big thank you goes out to Velma, Virtual Electronic Marketing Assistant. We have a wonderful partnership with them, and they're a sponsor of the broadcast. Appreciate so much what they're doing to get the word out about the broadcast. They send out probably one of the best email blasts out to everybody. And there's a correction. We created a response at how they get their logos to go through. They're doing some innovative things, and that is coming up. I said that they are doing that. In actuality, that's something that's being developed. They're one of the first to getting it out, and it's very cool how they kind of – if you know how virtual electronic marketing systems work, it strips out the logos and images, but they are working around that. Very, very creative. So be sure to get – a hold of Brent Emler at Velma. You can check it out at Velma, V-E-L-M-A.com. Joe Farr, there is a lot going on in the markets. I've got your website up here. Appreciate you being one of the sponsors and active participants of this broadcast. Look at this market right now. Again, everyone,
been a little volatile.
Really volatile. Tell us about today. What's happened today?
Well, you know, today it's, I think they're a number of factors, much like last week, and I'll go over that too. But, you know, today we started out with some pretty strong economic data, or you know, better than expected economic data. June Empire State Index was better than expected, and better than May, as was the National Association of Home Builders Confidence Survey. It was higher than in May and better than expected, and industrial production was better.
Yeah,
beat the consensus, and so with all that pretty good economic data, you might expect MBS prices to be lower, but in fact, much of this morning they've been higher. They're positive 2/32 on the day, but they've been as high as 7/32 higher. So why is it better? A couple things. One is IMF has downgraded expectations for U.S. economic growth. They're saying GDP in the 2014 is going to be 2%. That's revised from 2.8. And that gave the MBS markets a little boost. And then I think there's a little bit of flight to safety in there with all that's going on in Iraq. I think that if there weren't some of that uncertainty, I don't think it's a big driver, but if there weren't some of that uncertainty, we might see the stock market a little bit higher and MBS prices a little bit lower. So there's some of that going in there. So, yeah, it's
interesting.
It's just been bouncing around, you know, low of about where it ended the day on Friday and a high of about 6/32. So it's not real volatile, but certainly bouncing around. So last week, we wrote about it in our weekly newsletter that mortgage rates received a lot of influence from a different places, different directions. And for the week, we saw a small rise in mortgage rates. And, I mean, we're just talking about 2 or 3 basis points rise in mortgage rates. But sort of as we go through the week, on Tuesday, the JOLTS survey came out. And, Dave, I know this is one of your favorites, as is Janet Yellen's, but the JOLTS survey showed 4.5 million job openings, and that was the highest reading it's been in 7 years. So really a nice jump and a good indicator. And that caused MBS prices to fall pretty hard. Then on Thursday, retail sales came out, and it was weak, a miss on retail sales, and a strong 30-year Treasury auction. Both those things helped MBS recover some of their Tuesday losses. Retail sales were up 0.3, which was good, but it was still below 0.6 expected, although April was revised a little bit higher. And then on Friday, a negative PPI came out, and you know, it had a small influence on MBS prices to improve, along with a weaker than expected or not as strong of consumer sentiment. So on the day, and you know, the thing about PPI, it was really a pretty big miss to the downside, which again should have been good for MBS prices. And it was a little bit, but not much, due to the fact that PPI has become sort of a new measure. There are new components in it, and it's creating a good deal of volatility. You might remember last month's CPI number was surprisingly high, as this month's PPI number is surprisingly low. And I think the market's still trying to figure out what it's telling them. And I think its volatility is such that it's going to be more useful over a longer period of time rather than on a month-to-month basis. And that kind of leads to this week, because one of the big events this week is CPI is coming out. Its calculation has not been changed, and so its reading is going to be more significant to the market. It comes out tomorrow. Housing starts also come out tomorrow. But then the big event for the week is the Wednesday Fed meeting. Now, the Fed meeting starts tomorrow, but the announcement statement is going to be released at 2:30 on Wednesday. I'm sorry, 2 o'clock on Wednesday, with a press conference to follow at 2:30. The market expects no change in things like the Fed funds rate or the pace of tapering. But they will be looking for any hint as to a change in policy as to the level of Fed funds rates out into the future. And with two new members joining the committee this month, Vice Chairman Stanley Fischer being the more significant of the two, the market will be looking for any influence they might have over the direction of the Fed. Thursday next week, unemployment claims has become kind of a focused upon indicator of the level of the labor market. Philly Fed and leading indicators round out the week. So it should be a big week. Pay most attention on Wednesday in the afternoon for the statement, 2:30 Eastern
that
time for the
yeah.
press conference.
Yeah, those will probably be the biggest indicators. No real surprises anticipated there. Probably some commentary about the JOLTS report because, I mean, that's what Janet Yellen said. She says, I think it's the winter. I think we're going to see this number come back, and that's the number that she's focused on. I like it just because it sounds like a great cup of coffee. No, I'm serious. So when you really, all kidding aside, when you really dive in and look at this, what this report is, it is really significant in the number of touch points related to the labor markets and employment in our nation. I can see why Janet Yellen is so fond of it. So you're right, Joe. I have kind of become fond of it as well, just to study it and understand. Appreciate it so much, Joe.
You bet.
I hope you had a good Father's Day. I meant to say that at the beginning of the broadcast. Hope everyone that was on the broadcast had a great Father's Day. Did you get to watch the Spurs just absolutely trounce the Heat in the series at all?
I did.
And then the game last night?
I did that.
Man.
That was amazing.
That was such a good game. Being an avid Spurs fan, it was really fun to see. But, yeah, folks, I appreciate you tuning in with being with us. Check out the MBS Quote Line website. And if you want to learn more, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quote Line delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur. Get MBS prices as trades happen. Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quote Line, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quote Line today at MBSQuoteLine.com. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. Appreciate you. Again, you want to stay tuned all the way through to the Hot Topic segment. We got the recruiting topic with Casey Cunningham. It's going to be great. A lot of information on there. I'm looking for Paul Mallow. I'm not sure if he dialed in or not. But, Paul, are you out there today? Are you with us? I see that, I try to get him identified his phone lines, but he's got enough different phone lines that he kind of dials into. I don't see that he's on the line with us. Be sure to check out the IMF News website. There's a lot of great information there. The bank and thrift repurchase activity fell 21%. John Bancroft's got that story out there. Paul wrote about FHFA. He calls them FIFA, just drives him crazy. But FHFA tells Congress Fannie Mae and Freddie are hardly out of the woods. That's an interesting article. There are lots of great information on this website, so be sure to check it out if you have the moment. If you think of it, www.imfnews.com. Let's get over to Alice Alves. Alice, so good to have you on the broadcast each and every week, and I know you've got a bit of an update. There's some new things to report to our
new
listeners.
News.
New news.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, we've all been waiting for the QRM rule, and so the Wall Street Journal was reporting that the SEC now has kind of given up on the idea that they'll ever get a down payment percentage as a part of the QM rule. It looks like, at least from the report, that they've conceded to that, which was really one of the big holdups, and that they're willing to move forward, but they really want that the definition of the QRM, as many of you know, is the trying to get that qualified residential mortgage, which essentially is the risk retention provision. You know, what types of mortgages would essentially require a lender to have a set-aside? Right now, the QRM rule has a very limited scope. It came out essentially being that risk retention would only have to be held if you trigger Section 32, not even Section 35, Section 32 of the Truth in Lending Act. But the SEC still wanted that down payment provision. So they're saying, we're on board. We'll let this thing move forward if we can get that. We're going to look at it again in 2 years, because they firmly believe that, you know, they want to make sure there's some boundaries for responsible lending and that, you know, the down payment is related to that. And then thereafter, they would want that there's a review every 5 years. So, you know, I don't know, there's a lot of benefit in that and re-looking at a law, although it creates a lot of upheaval in the interim. But at least we know now it might be moving forward. So that's one of the biggest pieces of news is, you know, everybody's been waiting on a few of these rules that haven't moved forward. A couple of the others, though, that we still don't have anything on. I don't see anything moving forward yet on HMDA. The CFPB published what they're going to do, but we don't actually have a proposed rule yet to be able to comment and respond on. Now, there still is the QM rule that is open for comments from the CFPB website. So you can still go to consumerfinance.gov because I know you all have it saved in your favorites, right?
Yeah. First thing I go, Facebook, and go check that out.
I'm the only one that has that up there instead of YouTube on my favorites bar. But in any case, that comment period is still open. So I'm still for getting out there, commenting on, you know, what makes sense with an exception, not exception, but a cure mechanism for the points and fees test. I mentioned on the last broadcast, not last week, but the week before, there's some good comments out there. I'm surprised how few people have commented. I think this is a big deal. You would think people want a way to cure this. So get out there and comment. If they don't see a lot of response, maybe they'll go, well, as the industry, I guess they don't really care. They're just really busy right now. So we care. We want a way to cure this. Some other folks brought up, hey, what about if I just simply get a administrative error, you know, like the wrong NMLS number, or forget the NMLS number. Is there a cure for those? Those are great comments. Add them in. Comment period's open. Let your voice be heard out there. So everybody is still waiting for the HMDA. I mentioned that. FHA seller concessions, nothing yet. There's still word out there that it looks like that might be coming soon from FHA to move that down to 3%. And then make sure you've changed your VA policies now to catch that QM rule. It was a little quick, came out fast. Really applies to your your VA interest rate reduction refinance laws. Make sure you're catching those, that they need that 6-month seasoning, and 36 months the borrower has to recoup their expenses. So don't miss that. That kind of slid in fast, and get those protections in your systems now. So that's my quick report today, Dave, because I know we want to get a chance to talk about recruiting.
I know. I can't wait to get into that, but it's really good to have you bring us the update, especially there's so much going on, folks, and you just can – it just – Alice spent so much time tracking it. Alice, where is – give them your updated website so people know where to go to check you out.
Yeah, so from we still – our mortgage-u.com, that URL still works. There's lots of great information about Indicom at indicom.net, but – we are Indicom Mortgage U. It's very exciting to have all this technology and wonderful partnership and very brilliant people on a team, all of us working together to create the best e-learning out there. Folks, give us a call. We're happy to give you a very competitive proposal for that.
You got some great, great e-learning stuff out there. And I apologize. Tell Andy that I am guilty of not getting your new ad uploaded here, so we are not mentioning Indicom. So my apologies to the folks at Indicom. Folks, we've got Tony Caritano coming up right after the break, and I'm excited. He got some great questions to fire off to him. Lots going on, and so stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals, providing classroom and web-based delivery, and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Good to have you with us, each and every one of you dialed in. I'm scrolling up and down to all the people dialed in. My goodness sake. Obviously, our hot topic with Casey is going to be resonating with a lot of people, so we got a lot of people dialed in. We're so excited to have with us right at the moment Tony Garitano. Tony is the president and founder of Progress in Lending. It's a great publication. Encourage you to get it. Also, you take a look at their Today's Lending Insights. I get to write for both of them. I'm very pleased to do so. Tony, good to have you with us. How is things up there?
They're going well. Pleasure to be here, Dave. We have some sunny weather, so I'm happy.
Well, you're the guy that had to buy a generator, I mean, the super-duper snowblower and everything else because of all the weather you get up there. But speaking of what's going on, there's lots of other things changing in the industry that related to technology. And, again, everyone, if you don't know Tony Garitano, he is the technology guy. He's got his finger on the pulse of everything going on. Check out the website, www.progressinlending. Tony, there are some changes coming from August 2016. Required by the CFPB, and first of all, make our audience aware of those, and then the big question is, do you really think everybody is ready for that?
Well, I think what we're talking about is the new combined good faith estimate and TIL.
Right.
It's a very big change, as you know. Those are huge forms that the industry has been generating since forever. Do I think the industry will be ready? From what I hear, they will. I think the LOS providers and the doc providers have a roadmap, and you're going to start to see some announcements in the end of August, early September, about what they're planning, and you'll start to see things becoming available by the end of this year, early next year, so that people have several months to test it out. So I think the industry will be ready for the most part.
That is encouraging to hear, Tony. There's a lot going on with so many vendors. I mean, first of all, a lot of them are in a SaaS model, so the volumes are down, their incomes are down. So try to roll these out when incomes are being compressed, margins are being compressed. That's a bit of a challenge. How can technology help lenders comply with the new forms or requirement? Give us some.
Well, it
seems obvious, but I'm not sure that it is. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, it depends on who you talk to, Dave, because I think a lot of the LOS providers were very – put off by the January changes, and a lot went into making sure that their people comply. And if you talk to the LOS vendors, they're really leaning very heavily on the doc prep vendors for this next change. And if you talk to the doc prep vendors, again, they say they're going to start coming out with their strategies in August or September. But what I'll be looking for when those doc prep vendors start to announce is what their strategy exactly is, because there's some differences in opinion in terms of the version of MISMO that these doc prep vendors use.
Interesting.
Some of them will use version 2.8 or, you know, a version 2. MISMO standard versus going with the most recent MISMO standard, which is 3.3. And the reason why that is important and of note is because Fannie Mae's ultimately their closing requirements
right.
are going to eventually require people to adopt the 3.3 MISMO standard. The problem is that for a lot of the doc prep vendors and the LOS vendors, 3.3 is a huge investment. So going with 2.8 is a much simpler, cheaper way to comply.
Interesting.
So we'll see who chooses to do what in terms of which MISMO standard they adopt. And I'm also hearing from a lot of people that the standard doc libraries that a lot of doc prep lenders rely on are just not going to cut it. And
really?
We're going to need to get more dynamic document technology usage in the mortgage industry. So if they're not doing 3.3 and they're not doing some kind of dynamic document creation, they are going to have to do that eventually. So we'll see who gets there sooner versus later.
Lots to be tracking here, and if you're not subscribed to Progress in Lending, I encourage you to do so. Tony, the best way to do so is just have refer them to the website, www.progressinlending.com.
Yes, sir.
You have got a great group.
Or they can call me or email me.
Yeah, you know, email Tony at tony@progressandlending.com or call him at 203-529-3131. Tony, thank you so much for being on the broadcast. Always fun to have you on and get the updates on what's going on in the world of technology, Tony. Appreciate you, man. Really good friend.
Thank you, Dave. Have a good week.
Great resource, folks. If you, yeah, I say great week to you, too. A great resource on what's going on in technology. So much going on in all the various areas. Another great resource is Sam Garcia of Mortgage Daily. He got Sam on the line. Sam, what are you seeing on the headlines? Anything that we want to talk about? And I want to get really quickly to some of the research data because it is just such a treasure trove of information there. Sam, good to have you on the broadcast.
Thanks for having me. I think one of the most interesting stories that we did this past week was with NMLS registrations. And what we saw was that 392,896 mortgage loan originators that work for banks and financial institutions were registered as of the first quarter. And that dropped from nearly 395,000 a year earlier. And then at the
really?
Same time, yeah, yeah. And at the same, which, you know, you kind of would expect that there would be a drop because of the drop in originations and all
well,
the
yeah,
layoffs.
Well, yeah, that part you get, but.
But the thing is on the other side of that, state registrations, people who work for non-banks that originate and are NMLS registered, went up over that same period. So we're seeing a little bit of a migration, you know, migration
yeah.
from the one to the other, where, you know, we saw in the prior year that really we saw the opposite happening, where it looked like a lot of loan originators were moving to banks because of the easier, you know, requirement that you didn't have to get a license, and also you can lend in multiple states. So that's kind of an interesting aspect of what's going on out there as these refinances diminish.
What do you attribute this trend to, you know, right now, Sam? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, what we've seen, the mortgage bankers recently put out a profit study, and what
right.
you've seen with these independent mortgage bankers is that they still have some pretty hefty human resource expense. They've been less aggressive in cutting their staffs, and that's cutting right into their profits, whereas if you remember Wells Fargo and Bank of America and Chase, they all really just were very aggressive in reducing the staff right away. So I think the banks really move forward more quickly to adjust to the new market, and now we're just starting to see maybe some of these non-banks doing the same thing.
Interesting, interesting. Some of the research you have on your website is just outstanding. Give us a little feature of it, please.
Well, you know, on this one particular story, people have been interested in it. So if you want to read it, just go to www.mortgagedaily.com and look for the headline, Loan Originators Migrate Away from Banks. And that whole story actually has more details about some of the states that have, you know, big activity, and then also which regulators have how many loan originators that are registered through those type of institutions.
That's the part that really, I think there's so much value in the Mortgage Daily subscription is because of that, the research and the data that's behind just the report. It's not just the report, it's the research that you have and some of the data behind it. It's very valuable, Sam. Kudos to you, man.
Thanks. And, you know, the thing is on the mortgage statistics tables we actually maintain the NMLS numbers by year, so you can go back to the first year they started collecting them and look at the historical data.
Very valuable. Sam, thanks so much for taking a minute to dial in, share with our listeners some of the information that's out there. Again, what this is all about, this broadcast, everybody, is to really begin to bring the most current information to you. We're here as a free service. And so we get guys like Sam from Mortgage Daily. Check it out, www.mortgagedaily.com, to log in, be a part of our broadcast, to share with you all this great information, Alice, everybody. And so we appreciate Sam being a part of it. Sam, have a blessed rest of the week. Good to have you here. And the Profit Doctor is out with one of his clients out on the East Coast. Hate to see him be gone and miss some of the wisdom he has to share with us, but it's always a pleasure to have him here be a part of it. There is a lot of need for due diligence, and he's out working on vendor due diligence right now. It's a big, big area, and it's something I call your attention to. If you're working with a vendor that works with any data that has consumer sensitivity, we literally were talking at one point in time, Alice, remember we were talking about whether or not you need to do vendor validation of of the janitor because they're walking through your office. If you leave files open, there is that a case? So, no, I think we ruled that one out, didn't we, Alice?
Yeah, I think we did. It's really just assessing the risk with each single vendor, right?
Yeah, it's a risk assessment, checking them out, make sure they're doing what they say they're doing, and they have the controls in place, because ultimately you are responsible, lender. So lots of information. We've got Casey Cunningham coming up right after the ad break. Can't wait to get in this interview. What's so nice about doing this radio broadcast, as I do it, we learn. So we're all in this boat together, and I can't wait to pick up on some of the tips that she has for recruiting. It's a big, broad topic. We're not going to be able to cover all of it, but, boy, there's some nuggets in what she has already sent over. So you're going to want to stay tuned all the way through the rest of the broadcast. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success,
Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability.
With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
It's good to be with you. Thank you so much for so many of you that dialed in to be a part of this broadcast. And I know a lot of you tuned in to learn about that really, really hot topic of recruiting. Please welcome to with me Casey Cunningham to the radio program. This is your first time, Casey. It's great to have you here.
It is wonderful to be here, David. Thank you so much for having me. What a pleasure and a privilege.
Yeah, what an honor it is. I just love you and your husband. I mean, you two make such a wonderful couple. Of course, I'm a little jealous of him. He got to fly jets. I mean, in the military, he's a fighter pilot. And it's kind of like the inner child in me, just I go look at his profile and look at it going, I see him coming down off that plane. He looks like such a stud anyway. And I see him coming down off that plane ladder and going, oh, my God, I would dream to do that. And so anyway, so you're married to our fighter pilot, one of the guys I just admire and so appreciate his service. Did you guys have a good Father's Day, Casey?
You know what, we did. I hope he's not listening and he's gotten a big head all of a sudden. So, we had a wonderful, wonderful Father's Day. He is my hero, of course, as he's fought for our country. So I just have him in such high regard. Love him dearly.
Well, it's great to have you on the broadcast. There are a lot of people that know you. You are well known in the country and in our industry. But for those of you who may not know you, tell us a little bit about yourself. For example, I know you were an LO starting way back in 1994. I started in 74, so I got you by 10 years. But you're a lot younger than I am, so we won't go there. But you are really just got a passion for this industry. And I love your sense of giving and just all your values, Casey. Tell us a little bit about your journey in mortgage banking in a few seconds to let our audience get to know you a bit.
Well, what a privilege. Okay, so I've been in it now 30 years. Actually, 1984 is when I started, and I have done the gamut of all the wonderful things most of your listeners are probably listening, from being an originator, understanding what it takes to be a top loan officer and having accomplished that. And then I got the privilege of really leading loan officers and managers, and I got also the chance to lead the operations, so it was processing, closing, underwriting, shipping.
Oh, wow.
And I got that privilege. That was about a $4 billion mortgage company at the time. We were in two states, dominated number one market share in Atlanta, Georgia, when I was executive vice president. And we did that as a result of knowing how to recruit and knowing how to help salespeople perform and get to the next level. And so my 30 years in the industry, the last 12 years has been dedicated to helping lenders around the country do what we were able to accomplish in our local markets and be able to do it nationally. So that's a brief on the
You do it well. You started consulting and doing. You started your business 1 year after you, I started the MBS and mortgage consulting. And so it's really, we got some a lot of alignment of values, folks. And that's what I appreciate so much. The name of your company, it is spelled XINNNIX. Tell us, that's a great story, and I want our listeners to hear that. How do you pronounce it? And then tell us how you came up with that, because I think it's a great story.
Okay, great. Well, make sure everybody's got it spelled right, XINNIX.
I
wanted to name the company, David, I wanted it to have something unique and special, and I wanted it to resonate with people. And in all the due diligence, someone said, they asked me a question, and they told me to make up a word that did not exist in the English language or the world, and she asked me one question. And she said, Casey, what do you want people to say about you and your company after they've experienced your products and services? And I went, excellence, integrity, quality, service, Lexus, Nordstrom's, Ritz-Carlton, the finest training they've ever received. And as a result of us, they lead more productive lives, both personally and professionally.
That's good.
And as a result of that answer, believe it or not, she says, I see X's because everything begins and ends with excellence. And those are the X's. And the IN stands for the infinite possibilities you have when you pursue excellence. And so through excellence, there are infinite possibilities.
I love that. Every time I hear that story, I just giggle because I think that really tells me and tells our listeners a lot about you, Casey, because you're very purpose. You just don't go out and say, I think I'm going to try the training thing. I'll try doing a little of this. You are very purposed, and you're really teaching a lot of managers right now on how to recruit. How is it that the trending compared on recruiting, how is the trending compared to other years? I know we want to get in. A lot of people tuned in to listen about recruiting. I want to get into that topic really quickly.
Absolutely. So, all right. We've been in business 12 and a half years officially, and it is the highest year we've ever had as far as our recruiting class and recruiting workshop. The demand is over the top. So huge, huge in the 12 years, it's the highest.
Wow, that 12 years you've been doing this and you've been teaching the recruiting workshop, that's really pretty amazing. I'm quite impressed. Alice, I'm going to toss the mic over to you and let you get into this. And another outstanding trainer talking to another trainer. So that's just excellent. I want to just listen in.
Well, Casey, great to have you on the program. That's a great story. I know we've been kind of friendly referral partners over the years. I know when it came to recruiting, we knew that people would get some good information from your company. So what do you think is triggering the demand right now? There's lots of shifts in the industry. Is there anything, any one thing that jumps out that's made this year so demanding?
You know, we've gone through some purges of our industry where we've seen loan officers flee, and this recent shift, and I won't say too recent, but this last shift from refis to purchases, there's just not enough skilled loan officers in the marketplace that can adjust right away. And some are able to adjust immediately from refi to purchase, but when you look at most LOs, they've got to get purchase production quickly. These lenders need their loan officers to adjust, and if they are not able to, they have to go recruit it. So they're out in the market right now trying to recruit and replenish the lost pipeline with those loan officers that know how to originate purchase business.
So
do
you find that they have somebody on staff already to do this? I mean, that's got to be, you know, not your average mortgage sales manager can go out and be good at recruiting.
You know, it's interesting, Alice, that you ask that, because most of the lenders that we're working with already have recruiters on staff. They might have one, and they might even have a team, but what we are finding is that they can't scale them fast enough. So by teaching their managers, both the producing manager and that non-producing manager, on how to recruit, they can literally grow overnight and be very strategic. We actually, Alice, have recruiters in our classes, and we welcome them to come take our recruiting class. If it helps the lenders, that's what we're here for. So, you know, right now they've got to have their managers recruiting to be more effective.
Well, that's great. So how would you describe the growing overnight? At what level?
Well, it depends on a lender's goals. We've seen some lenders literally grow overnight by just implementing from a one-day workshop, adding $500 million in production in 90 days. And I'm not inflating that number, saying that's the best one. we are finding trending that within 90 days after our workshop, and we quantify this, very measurable, of course, that is our goal for every person that, or every company that engages us, to make sure that they are getting a return. And, you know, if anybody's listening really wants production, I'll give you some key tips to how to help you so that you can grow overnight and be more strategic about your approach.
Wow, that's impressive. So I'm going to pass it over to you, Dave or Joe. Back to you guys.
Well, I was going to say the same thing. That's very impressive, Casey. And you know, if half a billion is not the best, what is
exactly.
typical?
What is the best?
Yeah.
You know, it really depends on how many managers are recruiting, okay? And what our process that we teach very specifically, and I think what's the challenge in the industry is most managers don't know how to recruit. But you can have as much as you want depending on the managers. I was looking at some of the stats before the call, and it's interesting. You know, I've got within 30 days 11 managers getting $153 million, 19 managers getting $465 million. And I was just looking at all the stats. And we've done this workshop that I'm referencing, only for the past 2.5 years. We've had recruiting classes for 12 years. When the industry started requesting it, overwhelmingly, we went direct to them and did it live with them and do a full one-day workshop where we can get those kind of numbers. And the key there that you guys will love, and those that are listening, is it only takes about an hour a week.
To recruit? To dedicate to recruit or to train to be a recruiter?
To dedicate to recruit. As if I'm a producing manager or a non-producing manager, depending, again, what your goals are, but we can show how in 1 hour you can get at least one appointment. And so if you want 2 appointments a week, it's 2 hours.
And Casey, aren't most branch managers, even if they are a producing manager, don't most managers recruit already?
They do, but most of them haven't really had it as the major priority until recently. You know, most of them who are producing have just been distracted because of the large pipelines. And what they're being asked to do today to recruit at a higher level, they're just not equipped at the level they need to be, is what we're experiencing. There's many of them that have been recruiting. We just help amplify their recruiting success.
And so what are the key things, the key aspects that a manager needs to know about in order to be a good recruiter?
We've boiled it down to five. There's five things that a manager
needs to
know. Number one, they need to know how to source, how to find the top talent. Number two, they need to know how to profile recruits. Number three, they need to know how to contact them. In other words, how to convert them over the phone to meet with them. So they got to have the right scripts when they make that phone call. Number four, when they're meeting with them, they have to know how to wow them and how to make that interview a memorable moment. And then number five is the follow-up.
Yeah.
They have to know how to follow up.
There's a five really important things. Let's dive into that, because I think if you really the real meat of what you teach are in these five points, is what it sounds like. So sourcing, that's a big topic. A lot of people struggle. Where do I start? It seems logical, but provide our listeners with a tip on sourcing top talent.
Okay. Well, it's interesting. Most of them know, you know, they'd say to me, if I surveyed them all, and we've done this so much, I can tell you, they're going to tell me, I'm going to ask my current LOs. Well, but do they really ask their current LOs at the level they could? So, for example, sending out an email this morning that says, hey, guys, if you're up against any competitors today, I want to know who it is. And every competitor they're going up against is getting some time in the market and getting to some referral sources. But
that's
they aren't
interesting.
Asking, yeah. They just don't ask often enough to their LOs, reminding them in the morning, whoever can give me the top five people they're competing with in the market today. And so that's an action item. If you're listening now and you go, I want to find some great talent, that's the first place I'd go. Go ahead.
Now I want to get into profiling. So once you've identified them, profiling them is the next big issue. How do you identify these guys? Well, by profiling, I'm assuming you say, you know, getting an idea if it's a fit for your organization. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I'm going to call every single person I know. If I get a name, I'm going to do all my research. The first thing is that I'm finding many managers are still not doing, even though it's available to them, and that's just looking them up on the web and finding out all the public information. I mean, go to their website, which is going to be pretty bland because of all the compliance requirements and they can't really give a lot, but you can do a Google search, go to their Facebook, look at their LinkedIn, and do all the research you can do and look for what you have in common.
That's interesting. So when you're looking at that, by the way, Alice, I think your phone is with you're not talking. We're starting to hear a lot of road noise if you're driving. I know you are. You're driving down to Indiana to be with me to speak, so I'm just hearing picking up some road noise. I think it might be from you. When you're talking about a recruiting cycle, how do you shorten it? Because you can get in a protracted process of trying to recruit, and it sounds like you're getting results pretty quickly.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting to me, David. Most of the managers will say, okay, it's a courtship. I'm going to go, oh, absolutely. But you want the courtship to begin with the best first date you've ever seen.
Yeah, that's a great way to
say it. Where they leave enamored, right? You don't always get a second date. So if you don't have what I call a very concise interview process, and there's four steps. I'm happy to give those to you, everybody. In the interview process, all right, so the person arrives. You're sitting down, you've convinced them to meet with you, and they may or may not be interested. That's what many, it's quite interesting. They don't really know if they want to work for you, or maybe they're just there because you told them, hey, just come meet a competitor. You can still wow them. So the four steps in the interview process, number one is the opening. You know, when you get to that awkward moment, you've talked about the weather, the kids, Father's Day, and now you got to say, okay, you got to have a great opening. The second thing is you got to have the right questions, the interview questions that are going to really deep down say, I care about you.
So showing interest. Yeah, okay. Got it.
Yeah, here's the interesting part. You're going to hear step three. David, it's shocking to me how many managers go to step three before they do step two. Okay? Step three is when you present your solutions, your company. You don't present your company ever.
Before,
in an interview, before you ask questions about them, because then they know you don't care about them. They know at this point you only care about filling a seat.
Yes.
And then the fourth step is the close. And agreeing as part of the close does not mean I'm closing you, you're hired tomorrow. It could, depending on how good you were on step one, two, and three.
Okay.
But the close is agreeing to, hey, what's next steps?
Well, that's really good. I'm going to toss it back to Alice. Alice, look at this. It seems to make sense, Alice, when you start looking at the process, but there's a little bit more to it. So, Alice?
Well, yeah, Dave, I want to be careful here if I've got too much background noise where I'm at. But so I think tell us a little bit about the examples of the behavioral-based questions.
Sure. Okay, so when you finish your opening and you're about to start asking questions, you want to make sure that the questions are all about them and learning about them personally and professionally. Of course, you need to know the questions you can and cannot ask, and I'm happy to provide that to you, Dave, if you want to post that. It says here's the questions to stay away from for legal reasons to keep your company safe. But behavioral-based questions, most managers don't really understand. Behavioral-based questions are questions that will help you determine a person's future behavior. And so if you have a candidate who's had a refi pipeline, who you're wondering, can they transition to purchase, because they've had a little bit but not a lot, you want to ask some behavioral-based questions that really drive down to how driven they are. So, for example, instead of saying, how competitive are you, scale of 1 to 10, right, 10 is competitive, a better question is always ask about the past to determine the future. The question would be, tell me about the last time you got into a competition. If they say, they pause and they don't really remember ever being on, you probably don't have a competitive person, which means you may not have a driven individual. Behavioral-based questions are the predictors for the future behavior of a recruit. A great story, David. Can I share a story about a behavioral-based question? All right, so I'm interviewing somebody last week. How many of you listening right now probably want your candidates to be good team players, I'm assuming, right? You want to make sure
absolutely.
They're not going to disrupt your team.
Especially after watching the Spurs destroy the Heat, which was a one-man show with LeBron, and then watching the Spurs all-out team effort. So, sorry, I had to slip that in there. Go ahead.
I was so thinking of you going, oh, my gosh. Okay, so think of this. So you want to find out if someone's a good team player. Instead of
right.
saying, what type of team player are you, is ask them. Say, tell me the last time you had conflict with a team member and how you handled it.
Great.
And now you know. So I asked a lady this question in an interview. She paused for a minute. She looked at me. She said, I told this woman I hated her at the end of the day. And I'm like, wow, what? She goes, this was somebody who reported to her. And she said, I've grown to hate you. And I went, okay, this is not somebody I want on my team. But the right questions will determine the right predictors for you of their behavior. But
that's very good.
Let me address one most important thing, Dave, for everybody listening.
Yeah.
You gotta know. You gotta ask questions. The more write this one down, everybody. The more questions you ask, the more likely you have them captured.
Yeah.
And we all know
you ask
questions, right?
I'm stepping on Alice a little bit here, but what's so interesting about that is what do people like to do? They like talking about themselves. So people think, well, I'm just asking too many questions. That's not the case. People generally like talking to them about themselves. And so if you ask probing questions, you're showing genuine interest in that. I get it. One of the things that you had mentioned a little bit earlier in your notes, I think we skipped over, was you said prepare 10 key questions prior to the meeting, so you're not going in there thinking, okay, gosh, what do I need to ask? This is really interesting. I wish I could think of something else. So it's important to really go in prepared is what you're talking about.
Oh, it's the most important piece because, remember, it's a first date. We want a second, and we want to wow them. And you're going to see them actually when you pull out the questions, they're going to immediately think professional, prepared,
yeah.
And this is someone that's not just looking to fill a seat, but looking for a new team member. And it's a huge compliment to them when you say, hey, before we talk about my company, I want to learn all about you.
Yeah, it's
and
good.
You have the 10 most important questions. Now, the questions can vary based on, of course, the production of the individual, but you want to have your core 10 questions that help drive your future recruitment. Success.
This is just so fascinating. Alice, I'm so sorry that I kind of hijacked it there. I had a few things I wanted to get back to. So, Alice, I'll get back to you here if you had one more question you wanted to get into. If you had any more.
Oh, no, that's fine. No problem. I mean, it's great stuff because I don't think folks really, as you're saying, Casey, really pay attention to this level of detail and how important it is. So, let's see. So, tell me about kind of the, accountability at this point, right? So what should be kind of included in their business plan, and how do you keep this? What are some of the things along that line that you should talk to them about?
Specifically on the recruiter, is that what you're talking about, Alice, asking them questions?
Yeah, if you're interviewing, right, in that interview process.
Depending on the kind of leader you are will determine the questions, because if you're, I don't want to call it a micromanager, but a leader who likes to get into the details, you'll have different questions. But in general, I want to learn how they feel about prospecting. I want to learn how they feel about or what they've been experiencing as far as their involvement in the loan process and what they're expecting as involvement. And the more questions, and again, the more questions you ask, the better. I want to know about their business plan. Do they have one? I'm going to find out, are they a real optimistic person or pessimist? And just so you know, there are three key drivers to know about someone's success. And they're called drive questions. Anybody listening in, there's three things that determine someone's driven. And this was done by a gentleman who wrote a book about, the name of the book was Never Hire a Bad Salesperson Again. Don't you love that title, David?
Great title.
He basically did extensive research, PhD, and he said there's three things that will determine if you have a driven salesperson. And the first one is optimism. You think about it, how much change we've gone through this industry, and we keep plugging along. The second one is competitive. Are they competitive? The top salespeople are competitive. The third is they have a need for achievement, and they can't even explain why.
That's good.
And so if you get your questions around those, David, then you got a great questionnaire to determine whether or not you've got a great candidate. And, you know, of course, there's those good candidates. You have good candidates,
yeah,
and you have great candidates. I'm talking about the ones that are good, somewhat iffy.
Yeah.
But sometimes you've got a diamond in the rough.
Joe, let's get back to you. I know you've got some more, some areas that you want to zero in on.
Well, you know, top producers, that's what we're talking about trying to recruit, also have big pipelines, and seems like it's very complicated for them to move from one company to another. So how do you, you know, what does it take to get a top producer to change companies?
Well, there's quite a few things, and you're right, Joe, they do. They have these big pipelines. And how do you get them to switch? The first thing you need to know is if you have a compelling value proposition, like the top producer can see themselves growing with the other company, it won't be as tragic for them to have to walk away from pieces of their pipeline, realizing they have to be respectful of their current company and they can't take their pipeline with them. But anytime someone says, how do you get a top producer to change, it's have a compelling value proposition, and that's where I would challenge any managers that are listening. If I said to you, what are the top three reasons to work at your company? Man, you got to know it, and you got to know it backwards and forwards. What most managers do is they tend to go on and on and on, as opposed to really keeping it concise. But for a top producer, if they get the attention, and I mean they feel significant, and I have personal stories we don't have time to tell today of literally story after story of top producers who changed companies that other lenders thought they could never get. But they got them because they made them feel significant in the interview process. And they did not let them go. And they had that solution that you just asked about, what happens to my pipeline, where you say, we're going to help you regrow your pipeline as quickly as possible because there's never a good time to leave. Hopefully that answered your question. That answered your question?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and then the next one is you know, as a company's considering, you know, adding more producers, trying to build production, what does it really take for them to have a strong recruiting program?
There's several things. The first thing I'd advise for any executives that want a strong recruiting program is they have to have, their hiring plan, which I'm sure they have quantifiable by person, by manager. But they have to have accountability by executive leadership. That's the part about our recruiting workshop that people really favor, is that there's accountability because you actually have to make recruiting calls in our workshop. But the follow-up is the key as well. So for any executive listening, is you have to have the accountability piece, where they're reporting every week, and I mean every week, by a certain time and day, that here's how many recruits I spoke to, here's how many I've reached out, and here's how many I've followed up with, and here's how many I've met with. When you have the accountability piece, you'll have a higher degree of success. So that's the most important part, and having a very succinct hiring plan.
Yeah, and so is that what is in your hiring plan, numbers, dates, times?
It's also numbers and types of recruits. Very important that you have rookies in your hiring plan, average loan officers, and top loan officers. Now, some of you listening are like, rookies? Are you serious? Listen, I go 20 years of training rookies from nothing. I didn't know there's a T in mortgage. And literally, if any lender listening today doesn't realize the aging population of our sales force is outrageous. It's 52 years old. This is for another call, but you should include recruiting rookies as part of your plan, but you should have mid-range and top-producing LOs.
Very, very interesting. Alice, you want to get in one more question? We literally have just less than 60 seconds before we have to wrap this up. Alice?
Well, I just wanted to say, Casey, obviously you're pointing out there's training at all levels. It's training the recruiters. It's training the managers. I mean, this is very in-depth in order to get a company to succeed at what you're describing.
Yeah, there's definitely different models. They can do a recruiting class or they can do the full workshop. And to do the workshops where you bring all the managers together, we do not mix companies, by the way, in our workshops. It is a private gig to help them grow their recruiting success. So we'd welcome anybody to help them.
Yeah, let's go right there with the 60 seconds less we literally have left. How can people learn more about your recruiting program? I got a feeling a lot of people are going to want to talk to you.
Certainly. Be welcome. Zinnix.com, Zinnix.com, or you can just pick up the phone and call us, 678-325-3500.
If the information is on the website, folks, it's all there. Click on it. Go to it. Casey, thank you so much for being a part of us. Really valuable information. We couldn't even scratch the surface of this one, so we got to have you back. And we will. Good to have you there. Folks, next week we've got Glenn Corso, an old friend, will be back on with a new friend, James Brody, their Community Mortgage and Lenders Association, CMLA. They're going to be talking about what some of the things Glenn is up to. Good to be with you, everybody. Have a great week, and look forward to seeing you back here next week.
This has been Lickin on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Albee, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.